You're listening to an American Theater podcast. American Theater is published by Theater Communications Group, www.americantheater.org.
Welcome to Offscript, American Theater's podcast about all things theatrical. And I'm Rob Weinert-Kent, Senior Editor. I'm here with...
Deep Tran, Associate Editor.
And Susie Evans, Managing Editor.
And we are... in summer, officially now, I think.
Yep.
It feels sticky and summery outside.
Isn't the first day technically like June 21st, though?
Really?
I always thought Memorial Day was a signifier that I should start, you know, showing my legs again.
Well, it's when you can start wearing white is Memorial Day.
Oh, right.
But it is technically summer. I'll say we're in summer.
We are going to talk about, it was balmy in Nashville. Is that a great segue or what? I was there.
Speaking of hot,
I was there a couple weeks ago for the Nashville Reps Ingram New Works Festival. It's been going on for about 7 years, something like that, 6 years. And I've written about it once before when John Patrick Shanley was the fellow. It's actually a pretty fascinating program. It goes for a school year. It goes from October through May, and they select. It used to be more playwrights. Now it's four playwrights, emerging-ish, mid-career, young. Work on their plays from October, work on a brand new play, not something that they submit. They submit an idea to Nashville Rep, and then they work, each month they go to Nashville and work on their play. In January, they have a famous fellow who's in the past has been Teresa Rebeck, Doug Wright was last year, Shanley, and this year was Donald Margulies. And they have them, you mentor them for a week, and then in May, they have the festival where they read all their work, including, and then they read also something by the fellow. In past years, they've had full drafts of plays by Posterity, Doug Wright's show about Henrik Ibsen was there last year. John Patrick Shanley's Storefront Church was there years ago. Donald Margulies presented 45 minutes of a brand new play that was literally 2 weeks just fresh out of his printer, basically. And it was pretty fascinating. It was interesting, very Margulesian play.
About two
brothers who'd been separated for a long time who came back together, but it was actually pretty prickly and funny. And I mean, I'm not supposed to be reviewing it because it was only 45 minutes. I can't think I've ever seen a writer show their work with actors in front of an audience at that early of a stage. So it was kind of interesting. And that it was kind of a great demonstration of what this whole program does, where they work with writers from the idea all the way to a full draft with a stage reading. So I'll be writing about it any second now for our AT Online all about this. It's just interesting. The new play programs in the country all have different ways of doing it. And this, the one in Colorado has a similar thing where they do a couple readings and they do the rewriting there.
Yeah. But that's only 2 weeks as opposed to
only
to
2 weeks.
Year
yes. This goes through the whole like October to May. And then Nashville Rep, you know, it's part of their season now. And they have a sort of a following for new plays in Nashville. And Nashville's a great city. One of the best actors there, who was sort of the lead in the Margulies play, this guy named David Alford, and he looks sort of familiar. He's on the show Nashville. He's Juilliard trained actor who's from Adams near Nashville, and he's like a local boy made good. And there's some great talent down there. So. Yeah, it's not just music. As Nate Epler, the resident playwright at Nashville Rep, told me, this is a city of storytellers. And I think it makes sense for there to be new plays being developed there as well as new music.
Is Nate Epler Nashville-based?
He is Nashville-based now, and I think he actually grew up near there, or I forget his entire bio. I think I asked. I have this terrible habit of asking people their bios over and over. Like, you know, where are you from again? Where'd you go to school? Anyway.
It's important information for an article. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I believe that his family lives nearby, too. So anyway, yeah, Nashville.
Yeah. And speaking of summer plans.
We're
just talking about summer theater. Because, well, when I first started getting really into theater, the thing that you're exposed to the first time is Broadway. And so Broadway goes from September to May, and in the summer there's really nothing. And so you think, oh, there's no theater in the summer, especially in New York, where nothing opens in the summer for the most part.
Right, but nothing opens, but it's a big time for people to come see shows.
Yes.
Right? Not nothing. Let's not forget that Hamilton opens on Broadway this summer.
That's true. I mean, things open. The season starts, but it's not at the fever pace that it has up to the Tony time. It's
well,
true.
Hamilton's atypical because most Broadway shows that open in July or August, they're usually not nominated for the Tonys because they've closed before that and people have forgotten
about it. We don't know if Hamilton will be nominated for Tonys. We expect it will.
Ah, we laugh.
Can't say for sure.
So, yeah, that is one of the that is an exception.
Well, Amazing Grace is opening on Broadway in the summer. Comes from Chicago, starring Josh Young.
I wish it well, but I don't.
Yes, exactly. But those are the two. It's not a big theater season in New York.
I mean, it's a time when the kinds of things that opens are tend to be commercial, like Act of God. I don't think it was thought of for a Tony thing, but Jim Parsons will probably get Broadway, you know, tourists. Amazing Grace, frankly, because it's a religious theme, will probably get tourists. It's a good brand name. When Bring It On a couple years ago was brought back for commercial run, it was brought back during the summer because, like, well, you know, I guess no one really thought this is an obvious prestige Tony thing.
It got nominated for a Tony for Best Musical.
I think it deserved it. But in any case, it was brought back during the summer period when it is a time you can cash in on Broadway. But we're not talking about Broadway here. We're here to talk about the wonderful summer festivals all around the country.
Yes.
I mean,
I
thought you were going to say that your introduction to theater was, for some people, it is like going to the theater in the summer, go off to Ashland or go off to, or their local, this is true of in many, many parts of the country, their local theater is the summer Shakespeare, right?
Right. Well, the thing about New York is the fact that there's not that very many big non-for-profit summer theaters. Biggest one is Public. Shakespeare in the Park. But other than that, like Playwrights Horizons, MTC, like they don't produce during the summer.
Right. Shakespeare in the Park is kind of a model for theaters across the country.
It's one of the models. Yeah, indeed. And so that's a big one we're looking forward to. We already talked about it a couple weeks ago. It's The Tempest, and what's the other show?
Cymbeline.
With Raul Esparza.
Raul Esparza was just announced today for the cast.
Are you rolling your eyes, Rob?
I have yet to see someone make Cymbeline work. And, of course, I didn't see Fiasco's version. But Cymbeline is just a non-favorite of mine.
Well,
Daniel Sullivan?
Daniel Sullivan is a wonderful director of Shakespeare.
I'm sure he is. Mm-hmm. I mean, I know he is. I've seen him do great work. Anyway, Cymbeline does not excite me.
I'm excited for of this city, one of my favorite things to do over the summer is to go up to the Berkshires. There's lots of theater festivals up there. Berkshire Theater Festival and Williamstown Theater Festival is one of my favorites. Mm-hmm. It's kind of like a summer producing theater. It's not really a festival. There's only really two shows playing at one time. Mm-hmm. But it's on the Williams campus in Williamstown, and there's a lot of things that I'm excited for this summer. I'm definitely going up at the end of June to see the world premiere of a new William Inge play off the main road. It is new. They found it in a drawer. Undiscovered William Inge play is premiering.
Between the socks.
We're also writing about it.
Yeah, I'm also writing about it. I spoke with the director, Evan Cabinet, and the artistic director of Williamstown, Mandy Greenfield, who I believe this is the first summer she's programmed at Williamstown. She took over last summer, but Jenny Gersten had programmed it. Yep. So I think this is the first summer Mandy's
programmed. So they find it in the cabinet or the drawer? No, I'm just kidding. So on.
I also think I'm going to go up at the end of July to Williamstown to see the new Michael Friedman musical, Unknown Soldier, which he wrote with Daniel Goldstein and Trip Coleman is directing. There's also Audra McDonald and Will Swenson doing A Moon for the Misbegotten. And there's one more that I'm super excited about. And it is Dominique Morisseau's Paradise Blue, directed by Ruben Santiago Hudson.
Brand new one. Is it part of it's like a trilogy, right?
Yeah, it's part of a trilogy. I've seen the other two, and I think I'm writing about Dominique for next February or something, so I want to go see her play.
Cool.
So there's lots of good stuff up in Williamstown, and it's just a really fun little town to hang out in, really green. I don't know. Another thing I think I'm going to do this summer is head down to D.C. and see the world premiere of Dear Evan Hansen at Arena Stage. Excited about that. What about you guys? What are you doing this summer?
Well, I am finally going to go back to, you know, one of my favorite theaters. I'll just say that. And which I think is the, you know, if Shakespeare in the Park is the model for a lot of summer theaters, I feel like Oregon Shakespeare Festival in Ashland is like the model for
January to the summer.
I mean, they really started as a summer thing, and it just sort of expanded into the fall and then back into the spring, and now it really runs end of January to
December.
End of November, basically. Well, they have the holidays off, basically. And lately they've been bringing their shows to the Wallace...
Annenberg Center in Southern California,
LA. Yeah, in Beverly Hills. And there's a lot to talk about that I'm really excited about. Actually, I'm interested. The Pericles, directed by Joe Hodge, which he did at Playmakers, is there. And that's also going to be everywhere around the country next year, including at the Guthrie, where Joe Hodge is taking over. But that's about the only Shakespeare that's at the top of my list. There's Antony and Cleopatra there. But the big things at Ashland Earth this year are the new Lynn Nottage play that's commissioned as part of their American Revolutions project. There is Mary Zimmerman directing Guys and Dolls, which sounds fascinating. I don't think she's
going to fly.
Are you going to get to see that?
What's that?
Is it like a flying Guys and Dolls or like lyrical dancing?
Yeah, right. There's going to be water on stage. Lots of water. No, I don't know. It's actually a departure for her. I think there's maybe one or two examples of her doing a scripted show that she didn't devise.
Jungle Book.
But not many. No, she wrote that. I mean, she used material. But like that was clearly a Mary Zimmerman creation. This is, you know...
This is Guys and Dolls.
Guys and Dolls. So we'll see. I mean, I'm fascinated to see it. I think she's a pretty visionary artist. And it's a classic American musical, obviously. It's probably the great American musical. But the big musical that I am especially excited, nervously excited about, they're doing it in the Elizabethan stage, which is their giant outdoor theater, which used to have only Shakespeare. And a couple years ago, they started to do like, oh, we'll do Three Musketeers. They did Don Quixote, Octavio Solis's adaptation there. Stuff that sort of fits in the Elizabethan big epic classical, but really is not Shakespeare. So there's an Elizabethan play called by Sir Philip Sidney called Arcadia that nobody but academics have read.
And you.
I have not read it. No, it's actually a prose. It's not even a play. It's like the giant prose poem that was very influential on Shakespeare. It's been adapted by Jeff Whitty of Avenue Q fame and set to the music of, wait for it, the Go-Go's. Directed by Ed Silvanus Iskandar as a very immersive, interactive piece. He's the guy who does all those things at the Flea that are there's meals. Mm-hmm. It's called Head Over Heels. I've read it, and I could take or leave. There's a couple Go-Go songs I cherish. I wasn't a huge fan. I gotta say, I love what I read on the page. It's got that Jeff Whitty sort of magic where it's irreverent and funny and sexy and. You can't believe he's getting away with it, with the stuff he is, and yet it's inclusive and warm. And I hope it is as good on the stage as it was on the page. I heard there was a great workshop that Laura Osnes did here last year, and Carmel Dean, I think is the name. I hope I don't get that wrong. Is the music director who's adapted the Go-Go's songs. Some of them sound like the Go-Go's songs. Others sound quite different and sound more Renaissance-y. So. I'm super excited about that. I have to confess.
Who's doing it out in Oregon? Who's Laura did the workshop, but
I don't know who they're bringing in. I do know that there's one of my favorite actors who's in Rock of Ages here, Michelle Mays. She's this tall black woman with these sort of blonde curls. She's in it. I would see it just for her. I don't know who's playing all the young leads.
So it's a jukebox musical, but. Done in a good way.
Yeah, I mean, it's a songbook musical. I would say it's taking the Go-Go songs and he had reigned to use any of the Go-Go songs and also their solo work. And he found this amazing Jane Wiedlin solo song that I forget the name of it that no one knows that just and he was able to redo some of the lyrics so that they fit the story. But the way they use "Our Lips Are Sealed" as that first act closer. My God, it's just like gave me chills.
So the book works; it ties all together.
The book works great, and yeah, the way that it uses again, I was singing along as I was reading it. Our Lips Are Sealed. I don't know if you know the song. Our Lips Are Sealed.
Yeah,
little harmony part. Da, da, da. Yeah, so that was great. It's great.
I think that's the only Go-Go song I know.
Me too.
Oh come on, we have the beat.
Oh, I know.
Oh yeah, yeah.
Head Over Heels. You don't know Head Over Heels?
Probably. If I heard
my sons
it, I would
are know. My sons are big fans.
You play your song. Your son's a new song every day.
They like to do repeats, actually.
Really? What are their favorites right now?
Actually, now they've segued to watching short Roadrunner cartoons, but we don't need to go into that. I'm trying to keep them on the high culture, but they just want to watch people crash into things. But, you know, that's
that
boys.
That is the age. And
summer,
my summer.
Deep.
Speaking of summer festivals, I'm going to the O'Neill Critics, the Critics Institute at the O'Neill Theater Center. And isn't the summer when they really start bringing in all of the conferences?
The O'Neill is a really fun place to go in the summer. I think anyone can go. Deep's going for the Critics Institute, which is a 2-week fellowship program where theater journalists from across the country come and study critical writing with Chris Jones. At the same time, there's their National Playwrights Conference, which is 6 new plays are read. They're staged readings, so they're not full productions. Plays that were read. I was there last year, and I'm going to forget her name. I'm Going to Pray for You So Hard was there, and it was at the Atlantic this year. Mm-hmm. Also, Mike Liu's Tiger Style, which I think is good on some productions in L.A., and I really enjoyed Has a Future Life, was there. It's a really fun place to see new work in development. And then they also have a puppetry conference and a music theater conference. They do 2 musical workshops. It's on this big center on the beach in Connecticut. Yeah. I think.
Waterford,
Connecticut.
Waterford, yeah.
Waterford, Connecticut.
I've heard it be compared to Brigadoon.
Kind of.
Do you get to see, I mean...
I think I said that.
You get to do the
You were Lindsay.
See the puppetry work and the musical theater work as well as the plays?
You don't get to see the puppetry. I don't think the puppetry conference happens at the same time as the Critics Institute. The summer goes from June to August, so it's a 6 or an 8 week program for the National Playwrights Institute, which is the longest one. The Music Theater Institute is the same 2 weeks as the Critics Institute, and the Critics Institute kind of plops in for this 2 weeks. So you get to see one of the musicals. We saw both of them last year, and you get to see 2 or 3 of the plays.
I have a question. Nicole Serratore is going as well.
So is Linda Buchwald.
Mildly Buter and Linda Buchwald, 2 writers who write for us. Occasionally, and Nicole says New England style housing, and she's very intrigued by what being from Boston. Yeah. She has no
Let
idea what that means.
Let me give you my little rant about that, because last year was the final year that the critics got put in these really, really shoddy dorms. I mean, they were nice. There was no air conditioning. The mattress was basically a cardboard slab. Co-ed bathrooms with like a little piece of vinyl for your clothing the shower, like meet these people and all of a sudden you're showering with them. It was fine. We had to shuttle there. It was off campus. But the O'Neill just celebrated their anniversary and they got all this funding and they built all this new on-campus housing, which are these beautiful houses and beautiful on-campus dorms. And Chris Jones, being the, you know, I don't know, guy that he is, always wanting to support arts journalism, got more money for the program. And so not only did he get scholarships for everyone involved in the program, so now that it's free, he also made it so that the critics get to live on campus in these beautiful, brand new houses so they don't have to commute in a shuttle from the bar. It looks lovely. I've never been there, but if anyone complains about the housing this year, I will have things to say.
Well, writer's life is suffering, so we'll compare the quality of work that's produced this year versus last year and see.
Well, yeah, you have to turn in your stuff at 8 a.m. You have a deadline. You have to turn in your reviews at 8 a.m. And let me tell you, when the Wi-Fi in the dorms isn't working and you haven't slept because you sweat through your cardboard sheet, it's a little bit harder to file your story.
And another thing that I'm excited for that I want to try to get to is the Mass Live Arts.
Oh, yeah,
it's also in the Berkshires because they're programming a number of really amazing downtown artists such as Andrew Schneider and his Obie winning work.
You Are Nowhere.
You Are Now Here. It's all there's no space in between the words, it can be read as You Are Now Here or You Are Nowhere.
Oh, my God. You blew my mind.
Yep. The thing is, it's one of those works. That's going to be the first week in July, I believe. Mm-hmm. And Nicole Serratore will be writing about it for us. Mm-hmm. And the great thing about that work is there's no way to describe it without spoiling the effect of what you will be experiencing when you see it. Because you don't want to ruin it for
It's not a spoiler to say he has his shirt off, though.
He has a shirt off.
Okay.
There's amazing electrodes. Projections and electrodes that are hooked onto his chest so that he can control the sound and the speed of the sound. So at some point, like his voice is like slowed down to a crawl, and at other points it's sped up.
Wow.
So it's about like time and perception of time and aging. It's out of this world.
And then
stuff.
Radio Hole's doing a new piece.
And Radio Hole, and I'm writing about Radio Hole's new piece, new commission about Krypton and present society.
Okay.
Who's tied in the title? I forget, but it will be in our July August issue.
Another summer thing we should mention, especially since we have an article about it in our July August, and I've never been, but I'm really hoping to go this summer, is to New York Stage and Film on Vassar campus, which is kind of a mix of Williamstown and the O'Neill. That's kind of how I've heard it described. They have kind of the readings and the workshops that O'Neill does where you get to see new work and development. You can go see them, any audience member. And then they also have two or three main stage productions that are fully produced that they do in the Powerhouse Theater on the Vassar campus. I've heard it's similar to, you know, Williamstown the O'Neill, and that it's, you know, very, it's like an oasis. It's, you know, green grass, getting out of the city. A lot of cool things have started there. Hamilton had a workshop there. American Idiot had a workshop there. This summer, there's a new Michael John Lacusa musical with Sybil Pearson, Rain.
Let me ask you this. I remember reading your piece, but...
That's going to be in our July-August issue.
Plays come from there, too, right?
Plays come from there, too. Yeah, totally. They have musical Abigail. Workshops and inside play workshops. What are some of the plays this year? There's readings this year from Ayad Akhtar, Claire Barron, Rick Ellis, Coleman Domingo, Megan Kennedy, Nikki Silver. Plays too. I mean, John Patrick Shanley has been there forever. I mean, Dowd had a workshop there. They also do screenplay readings, like they do work on film, too, hence New York Stage and Film.
Ah, yes.
The Debate Society, I think, is going up with the new work this year. That's one of the full productions. They went up last year, I believe, to work on something, and this year they're one of the main stage. What?
Did they work on Jacuzzi there?
I don't know. The play they're doing this year is The Light Years, which is, you know, I'm really excited about. I love the Debate Society, so hopefully I'll make it up to see that as well.
Is everyone going to be in the office?
I guess there will be some times we won't, but I mean...
Even Allison, our new editorial assistant, is heading to Contemporary American Theater Festival.
Mm-hmm. Well, they do. For us, yeah.
Yeah, for like four world premieres and one regional premiere of the new Sheila Callahan.
If you like taking weekend trips in the summer and you get those summer Fridays, take a weekend out of the city and go see some work in beautiful places.
Yep. Or summer Shakespeare Festival, summer... theater festivals.
There's lots of those. Yeah. There's lots of those happening. Shakespeare's, I think Shakespeare's St. Louis is about to start.
Mm-hmm.
A whole panoply, if you will.
Yeah. Go see theater outside. That's a theme of this podcast.
Yeah. Yeah. You know, Oregon Shakes will do it outside, rain or shine. And they'll sometimes stop it if it is really, really rainy. But I've seen them do Shakespeare I've seen them do Shakespeare with like tarp over the stage and like wearing rain outfits and
One of the most magical nights I've ever spent outdoor theaters when I saw Daniel Sullivan's Twelfth Night in the park with Audra McDonald and Raul Esparza and Anne Hathaway. And it wasn't raining, but it was a little bit gloomy. And then at the very end, when Festy the Clown starts singing the song, It Rains Every Day, it started raining.
Wow.
It was like pure theater magic.
Wow.
Talk about rain dance.
And it was amazing. Light enough, and it was the end of the show that they finished it. And I was like, oh my gosh, this was... breathtaking.
Yeah, Dan Sullivan was making a call to God. Like, can you bring some rain?
He's like, can you like sprinkle a little bit of this?
Stage manager, like,
stage
come
manager,
on.
Rain,
okay. Rain call, rain. Go.
and speaking of other summer plans, all of us are going to Cleveland next month.
I don't know what you're talking about. Yes, we are.
And Cleveland. Susie, do you want to tell us more about Cleveland?
Yeah, we have a great interview on this podcast with the artistic director of Cleveland Playhouse, Laura Kepley, who stopped by our offices while she was in town. Cleveland Playhouse is the recipient of the Regional Tony Award this year. They're the first regional theater in the country. That's how they bill themselves. And they also are the first regional theater to receive this award that's celebrating their centennial season next year. And we had a really great conversation about a lot of artists that come from Cleveland. It's really robust, a lot of robust artistic plays, a conversation about kind of the reinvention of the theater district in the city when Cleveland Playhouse moved, when Laura Kepley came on board, and now they have this district of theaters with Cleveland Public Theater. And so I'm really excited to go to Cleveland. I just emailed my friend who I'm going to stay with while I'm there, and she's like, there's a beach, so Lake Erie is nearby. There's good local breweries, you know.
I've heard it's hot in Cleveland. I don't know where I heard that phrase.
Well, Betty White, maybe.
I'm just kidding.
But yeah, it's a fun conversation to learn a little more of Theater Town. There's a lot of new work going on there. Eric Cobble has a new play, I think, in their next season, and
yeah.
I'm excited about it. So without further ado, here's our interview with Laura Kepley.
It's So we're here today for American Theater's Off Script with Laura Kepley, the artistic director of Cleveland Playhouse, which has just been awarded the Regional Tony Award and is also celebrating its centennial season this next year. Thanks so much for joining us, Laura.
It's my pleasure.
Cool. So how did you find out about the Regional Tony Award?
Yes, so we found out only about 3 hours before the rest of the world found out. We got a very exciting phone call, and actually at the time that we found out, I was actually in the Cleveland airport because I was flying to New York. My husband is a playwright, and he had a show opening that night.
Oh, fun.
So it was an amazing, an amazing day, and this is silly, but I had literally just ordered my lunch, mm-hmm. And I had ordered a burrito. I'm not lying. I get the news on the phone. I throw the burrito into the air.
So, that's amazing.
And there were spontaneous parties all over the Cleveland Playhouse offices in our production center. Everybody was just running around, and we're going to be celebrating all year long.
Yeah. Were you bummed not to be in Cleveland when it happened?
I was, but I have to say it was just, I was pretty much on the phone nonstop checking in with, you know, our board and everyone, and we were, it was just exuberant and exhilarating.
Cool. Did you get to enjoy your husband's opening?
I did. I didn't quite realize how quickly it was going live. Because I thought, oh, well, you know, this is his day. I don't want to spoil. He was opening Grounded at the Public.
Oh, great.
And, but then he actually, as soon as the plane landed in New York, he texted me saying, congratulations. So
that's so amazing. Yeah. That's fun. I haven't seen Grounded yet, but I really want to see it. I hear it's good. I don't know if it's still playing.
To the end of the month.
Oh, great. Yeah. Cool. I mean, this feels kind of like this award, this honor from the Tonys feels kind of like a long time coming for the Cleveland Playhouse. You've been around for 100 years now. You're the first theater ever to receive this award that is 100 years old. Mm-hmm. Have you been waiting for this? Does this feel like a particularly special year for you in terms of what you've been programming?
Yes, this is a historic moment for Cleveland Playhouse and for regional theater. The Cleveland Playhouse is the very first regional theater in the country. We've been continuously operating since 1915. So right now we're ending our 99th season. And in that time, we've performed over 1,600 shows for over 12 million people. And so it is definitely, I mean, this recognition really feels like a testament to that incredible legacy, but also a recognition of the transformation that our company is going under. In the last 5 years, we have really transformed the company. We've changed our business model. We've moved to a new location. We have new partnerships. And all of that was done to get to our 100th anniversary and also to ensure that we will be going for 100 more years.
Definitely. That's so great. I didn't know you were the first regional theater in the
country. We are. And we've never missed a season, mm-hmm. not during the Depression, not during World War II, not during any of the blizzards knocked us out. So yeah, we've been making theater for our community for 99 years.
Yeah, that's so great. What are some of standouts and some highlights from the years of Cleveland Playhouse?
Sure. Well, a lot of people don't know that many people were directing and making work in Cleveland before they had their big success. So, for example, Tennessee Williams, before Glass Menagerie, he did work at the Cleveland Playhouse. Margot Jones, obviously, when we think of her as one of the pioneers of regional theater, but actually she worked at Cleveland Playhouse before she formed her theater company in Dallas.
Oh, wow. Yeah. That's so great. And you joined in 2010, about 5 years ago, and you mentioned that you've made a lot of changes since coming on. How did you kind of come to be at Cleveland Playhouse?
Well, I was working at Trinity Rep. I'm very, very happy there. I was an artistic associate and a resident director. I was also teaching at Brown. But I heard about this incredible move that Cleveland Playhouse was making. We were moving out of the building, going downtown, really being part of the revitalization of our downtown, mm-hmm. That we were
linking together with some other organizations to really make a theater district. And I've worked in regional theater for a long time. And in my experiences, things don't change that quickly. But here was an organization that was completely investigating the way forward and making big sweeping changes. And so I mean, that was so appealing. I said, sign me up. I moved to Cleveland.
Had you been to Cleveland before?
I hadn't, actually.
Oh, wow.
No. I grew up in Cincinnati, so I am an Ohio girl, Ohio native. But it's an incredible city. I mean, and this is a tremendous moment for Cleveland. You know, it feels like the whole world is coming to Cleveland. You know, we've had the Gay Games last year. We have the Republican National Convention coming. Of course, the TCG conference is coming to Cleveland. And it's really, I'm really looking forward to the opportunity to showing off all of the great things that Cleveland has to offer. It is such a nurturing home for artists and for the art. It's a community that cares passionately about their culture. We have a world-class museum, a world-class orchestra, and the Cleveland Playhouse, and a great, we also have another Lort Theater in Cleveland, Great Lakes, and it's just a really burgeoning independent theater scene as well.
Awesome. Talk to me a little bit more about this theater district that you mentioned, about the move and kind of like, because theater is such a vital element to so many cities' economies, and this must have been such a boon for Cleveland in creating this district. So can you talk a little bit about what that meant for you?
So we partnered with Cleveland State University and with Playhouse Square. And Playhouse Square is the both a real estate company. They own all of the touring Broadway theaters. And they are also the largest Broadway touring in the country. They have 31,000 subscribers. So Cleveland is the hottest market for the tours.
Wow.
And so downtown, there are these beautiful, they were built as movie palaces and then renovated into theater spaces. And the theater that we're in, our main theater, the Allen Theater Complex, used to be a 2,500 seat theater. We then renovated it and it's now a 500 seat theater. So it's incredibly intimate. And then we built two theaters from the ground up. We have a flexible space and then a lab space. And I think one of the things that, when artists come to work at Cleveland Playhouse, they are blown away by the Allen Theater. I mean, it's a gorgeous historic building that has been, the historic shell has been transformed into a contemporary theater. So fantastic acoustics, beautiful, intimate, comfortable. And then our two flexible spaces really allow us to design the room around the play instead of having to, you know, pigeonhole or push the play into the room. We get to design not just the set, but the entire environment.
Yeah. Has having these new spaces to your disposal helped you with, you know, workshops and maybe more reading or developmental work at the theater?
Yes. Cleveland Playhouse has always, new play development has always been core to what we do. But most recently, with our Newground Theater Festival, we are bringing in fantastic people. We've had Kiara Hooties come in and she actually wrote most of her play, Daphne's Dive, in Cleveland. We've also commissioned her. This is very exciting. We've commissioned her to create a new play for actors and orchestra. So that will be in our centennial season, a collaboration with the Cleveland Orchestra. You know, I mentioned Ken Ludwig, who has been a member of the Cleveland Playhouse for a long time. His work, his new play, A Comedy of Tenors, will be premiering, will be opening our centennial season. Deb Zoe Laufer, Victoria Stewart, lots of really exciting, Jordan Harrison, Heidi Schreck, just a lot of artists have been coming to Cleveland, because it's, I believe, because it's a really nurturing, playful, collaborative space, and we have great audiences, like really smart, really perceptive, honest, very honest audiences. And, I think, I think more and more Cleveland Playhouse is getting to be known as the place to come create new work and develop the work that's going to impact our entire field.
Yeah. Though that list of playwrights you just listed off of sounds like such a diverse group in so many ways, mm-hmm. which I know is such a hotbed topic right now mm-hmm. in regional theater with gender parity and diversity and equity. I know it's a pinpoint of TCG's mission. How do you kind of focus on that as you're kind of programming a season as an artistic director?
Mm-hmm. It's critically important. I mean, you know, I think every regional theater is hopefully starting to realize how important it is to the survival of our art form. And it's really how I, one of the things actually, and this is something that I picked up at a TCG conference, or the nugget of the idea I got at a TCG conference, and just starting to think that it's critical to me that the population that we put on stage is reflective of our community. And so it's my job and our artistic staff's job to make sure that we are getting diverse stories on the stage, you know, both multiple, multi-generational, multi-racial, you know, it's just, it's critical. And that's the work that, also appeals to our audience. We just, did a world premiere, that's still running, Fairfield by Eric Koble, which it's hard to believe that in this moment in time that you can have a comedy about diversity, about, inclusion, because it's one of the, you know, sensitive, tricky issues. And Eric Koble has created this fantastic play that gets at the heart of the issue of diversity. The play takes place in an elementary school during Black History Month, and a teacher and a principal, tussle over what is the right way to talk about our past and the racist things in our past, and how do we as a culture create the world that we want our children to live in?
Yeah,
so
definitely.
It's a very heavy topic, but told, you know, just in a screamingly funny production.
Definitely.
Yeah,
cool.
That's when people are going to Fairfield by Eric Koble. You want to read it now. It's a great
yeah,
play.
Yeah, Eric Koble, who had The Velocity of Autumn on
That's
Broadway.
Right. That's right. And Cleveland native.
Yeah, he's great. Yeah. I think we did a big profile of him in American Theater
yes.
when he had Velocity of Autumn,
right.
which was really a great piece.
Right.
One of
yeah.
our Cleveland writers wrote that.
Yeah, and that's a really important part. I call it the Cleveland connection, that we are nurturing the artists that are in Cleveland, so that we retain them, so that they stay in Cleveland. We're also always actively recruiting people to come to Cleveland. But I think the biggest thing too, I call it the retrieval plan, is to go and find all of those great artists with Cleveland roots who are from Cleveland, who are working on the national stage, and bring them back home. So next year, Rajiv Joseph is coming back to do his play, Mr. Wolf, which
oh,
wow. we're incredibly excited about.
And is he from Cleveland?
He is.
Oh, wow.
He's C. That's the And so I have a big list of, you know, all of the really important theater makers and thought leaders from Cleveland. And, you know, it's very exciting for our audiences and for us to bring them back home.
Yeah. Somebody I recently learned was from Cleveland, an actor, not a playwright, is Michael Chernus. He's on Orange is the New Black.
Right.
He does a lot of work
sure.
with Annie Baker.
Sure.
I think he was in the original The Aliens.
Yes, I saw him in Aliens and
I think he did.
Open Space, not Open Space, Close Up Space.
Yeah, that's yeah. probably right. Yeah, he's great. Yeah, he's mm-hmm. on Orange is the New Black, and he did
yeah.
some show at Second Stage, and he
yeah.
was talking about, I'm from Cleveland. I was like, our conference is going to be there next year,
right?
Which is fun. Another topic I would love to have your thoughts on, just because it's, you know, very topical in the regional theaters, this idea of, you know, executive leadership and succession, because you mentioned you came from Trinity Rep to Cleveland, mm-hmm. which is a unique move to come from a different theater to a new theater. A lot of times, like Steppenwolf just announced a big transition from within. What are your thoughts on kind of how to best, like, Cleveland Playhouse has obviously been around for 100 years, so they've done it very well. What are your thoughts mm-hmm. on kind of leadership transitions, having recently done one
sure,
yourself?
Sure, sure. That's a big question. I'm actually looking forward to the conference and hearing lots of people speak on it. I was internally promoted And so I was the associate artistic director and became the artistic director. And I find that that's happening more and more now because, and I think it's important that you make sure that when you're doing a search that you look at everybody. But sometimes in the past, those sort of national searches have maybe overlooked the person who's right there. I mean, I never thought that I could move up inside the same organization, just in my experience in regional theater. I always thought, to move to the next level, you have to geographically move. And so I did that. And then, I think it really takes in any leadership transition, the search is so important that there are as many constituents and stakeholders meeting those candidates and talking to those candidates, and building consensus. But also, I think the most important thing is that before the search begins, that the organization put together what it is that they are looking for. I mean, that sounds obvious, but a lot of times I've found that sometimes it's just sort of a replacement cycle. It's not a thoughtful search. So, one of the things that Cleveland Playhouse did that was really extraordinary is that they asked themselves really just essential questions about who do we want to be at 100? What is the kind of work that we want to be doing? What are the conversations that we want to be having? And so then knowing those things as they looked for a leader, instead of maybe, I think sometimes we just get so wrapped up in the individual personalities that we may not align our principles.
Totally. That's a great answer. And I'm also looking forward to the conference when people talk about that. I've had a lot of conversations recently with, transitions at companies, and it's always such a fascinating conversation for me just as a journalist, because there's a lot of different ways to do it,
right,
based on the company's aesthetic.
Right. And I've been a part at Trinity Rep. Because I was there under Oscar Eustace, but then I went through, as somebody working there, I went through that transition from Kurt to Amanda Dehnert, from Oscar Eustace to Amanda Dehnert to Kirk Columbus.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
That's great. Cool. Well, I want to get back a little bit to the Regional Tony Award and to the TCG conference. What do you hope, if anything, that this award brings to the Playhouse specifically and maybe to Cleveland as a whole?
Mm-hmm. Well, having this recognition and bringing this recognition to Cleveland is something that we're incredibly proud of, because Cleveland, like many legacy cities or Rust Belt cities, has had a hard road. And in Cleveland right now, we are really turning a corner. I mean, there's more growth, more investment, more excitement and energy than in a very, very long time. So I think this is definitely a symbol of like Cleveland is back and everyone knows that Cleveland rocks. But it's an extension of that. I mean, I think, people are starting to find out, like I said before, that Cleveland Playhouse is a great place to come and do new work. I think this gets that message out loud and clear. And certainly the recognition, will help us with, spreading the word. And, as an organization that's going to be 100 years old, there are a lot of people in that 100 years that we have, connected with. And it's a great time for us to reintroduce ourselves to a lot of new potential audience. And also, if people have maybe not been with us since we moved downtown, it's a great opportunity to say, hey, now is a fantastic time for you to come and get to know us again.
Awesome. What's something that people will be really surprised to learn about Cleveland?
That's a great question. Well, okay, here are two fun things. This is for after conference activities. Our West 25th Street has the most local microbrews per square mile.
Oh, wow.
So it, yes. So if you could walk down West 25th Street, it is sort of the beer capital of America. So you, so there will be a lot of good, good beer.
Is it close to where the conference is happening?
It is. It is. And it's one, it's like a 5 minute taxi drive. Yeah. So West 25th Street. You want to check that
We're
out?
We're all making a note yeah. right now.
And the other thing is that, our Playhouse Square district where we are has the, second to Lincoln Center, it is the largest number of seats in a performing arts complex.
Oh, wow.
So you have Lincoln Center, and then you have Playhouse Square and Cleveland Playhouse.
Amazing. I guess you sort of answered a little part of my next question, which was the TCG Conference, which for listeners who don't know is Theater Communications Group Conference. Theater Communications Group publishes this magazine, and they do a national conference every year where theater leaders from all across the country and some from the world come to a specific city. Last year we were in San Diego, we've been in Chicago, we've been in Boston. This year we're going to Cleveland, and we have a great 3 to 5 day conference where everybody has new thought ideas about theater, including, you know, gender parity and executive succession. But when people aren't in those wonderful panels, what should they check out while they're in Cleveland?
Well, you know, every artist who comes and works at Cleveland Playhouse, they have to do their pilgrimage to the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame. So that's something that you, that everybody wants to check out. You know, we have, the Cleveland Cavaliers are doing real well now. LeBron James is back. So, you know, we have, it's very exciting that we have a great basketball team. Yeah. And I spoke about the art museum before, but the, our art museum has just completed a huge expansion, and it is one of the most incredible collections in the United States. And this is something maybe people don't know. It's entirely free.
Oh,
the
wow.
museum is free and open to the public anytime, which I, as an artist, I am so thrilled by that, because there's a sense, you know, when I'm working on a show, that I sometimes will just go and spend time just in one gallery, you know, that you can really just drop in to the museum. You don't have to make a whole day of it. You can just drop in. And, you know, if there's a certain time period that the play you're working on, you know, I just get so much inspiration from visual art. Yeah, the Cleveland Museum of Art is incredible.
Awesome. A good friend of mine is an artist who actually lives in Cleveland. I think she just had an exhibit or a studio at the museum. So I'm going to stay with her before the conference. Yeah. So I'm sure I'll check that out. And then just to wrap up this great conversation, we're really excited that you joined us today. What is one of your proudest moments other than receiving the Regional Tony during your tenure at Cleveland Playhouse so far?
Such a good question. I would say, you know, people know that Cleveland Playhouse makes great theater, but what they may not know is we also are a leader in our educational programs. And we have, in fact, Cleveland Playhouse in 1933, so in the depths of the Depression, our founders realized how important education was, how important community outreach was, how important the arts are and theater is in making better, better lives. And so I have to say we have, in our education programs, we serve a lot of different students, you know, who come to our shows, or also we have a touring show that goes out to the schools, you know, so that kids have at least, you know, one or two arts experiences with us. But the thing that I'm most proud of is that we have three different employees who are theater artists who are at three different schools as site coordinators. This is part of a United Way wraparound initiative. Mm-hmm. So three different Cleveland Playhouse teachers and artists are in the schools all day long, and they not only connect these students that are in our most at-risk, our most underserved communities, they connect the students with the arts, with other artistic opportunities and influences, but they also are there to connect kids, caregivers, to social services as well, so that we are another person. Cleveland Playhouse is there in the schools as another adult who kids can lean on, who can connect to. So I really, when I go to our three schools and see the impact that we're having, because the arts and the social emotional learning skills that we're teaching not only gets the kids ready to learn, but it also changes the school culture as well. Attendance, you know, we've been in these schools, one school for 2 years, the other schools were ending our first year, but attendance numbers go up. Health goes up. Quality of life goes up. And again, it's for the students, but it's actually their caregivers and the whole community. So that was a long answer, but that's what I'm most proud of.
That's awesome. Do the kids get to come see shows at the Playhouse?
They do, and their parents.
Oh, great.
And their caregivers. So yeah, it is. We have, both designated performances, but also a pass that they can come in and see the work.
Awesome. And that's just your standard program? There's no like targeted young adult programming or anything for them, or they come to anything?
Well, the students in our wraparound initiatives and the principals, you know, when it's the schools that we're all in are, K through eight, and then, is one, and then the others are, K through three. So we actually go out to them with we call it a classroom matinee program. So we go out with, we have two shows, one on, bullying and one on, financial responsibility.
Okay.
It was actually, we were doing Good People, the David Lindsay Abaire play, and some of the issues that are in Good People, also in terms of classism and racism, how do you talk about those issues in an age appropriate way? So being inspired by Good People, we created a play called Margie and Mike, which again, it's really, yes, we are all so proud to get the regional Tony. But for me, the daily interaction with our audience members and with the students is what sustains me and, is the most gratifying.
Awesome. Cool. Well, we're so happy you came by to chat about
it
today.
Thank you.
And I hope you enjoy the rest of your time in New York, and I look forward to seeing you at the Tonys and in Cleveland.
Thank you.
Thanks, Laura.
It's a pleasure.
And we're back with a few recommendations. I'll just start by saying that this weekend I'm taking both my kids to New Victory, a piece of New Victory called Paper Planet. I believe it's from Minneapolis artists. I know that by the area code of the number I'm about to call them at today to talk about it. Immersive theater, the whole idea of experiential theater, of walking through things, touching things, and toddler theater is a, kind of an obvious match. It hasn't always been the case, but I think that kind of theater, what interests me about it, not just the fact that I could take my kids to it, but since I've looked into it, is that it really, when you're dealing with people with that attention span and lack, you know, pre-verbal, you do really have to break theater down to what it is. It's just people in a room experiencing things, playing. And, so I'm looking forward to it. I know almost nothing about it. The pictures look adorable. Also this weekend, I'm going to write a little bit about this. I'm not going to go to it. In Atlanta, they've been doing this for a couple years now, something called the Toddler Takeover at the Woodruff Arts Center. Alliance Theater Company, I believe, has children's and education programs, and they've been at the forefront of this sort of theater for the very young, toddler, like age 2 to 5, basically, theater. And so I have no idea. It's Toddler Takeover sounds actually sort of horrifying. No, I'm going to write about that. And maybe one year I'll go there. Although by that time I might not have toddlers.
Is your youngest even, isn't he on the tail end of being a toddler?
2.5? I think 2.5 is still very much a toddler.
I think they're a toddler till they're like 4.
Yeah, I mean, Oliver will be 6 in July, so he's really like not a toddler, definitely. But he's welcome. He's seen lots of plays. He'll show Nikki the ropes of how to watch a play, or how to experience a play. So, he's going to start graduating to Broadway shows soon. Deep, what are you going to recommend today?
Yeah, since we're talking about summer vacations, when you're traveling, you need something to listen to. So I have music recommendations from theater artists. Because I did a Q&A with Ethan Lipton, who won an Obie Award for his show No Place to Go 2 years ago. And we talked about how there seems to be an increasing number of theater artists who moonlight as singer-songwriters. And Ethan's new album, Raw Milk, came out on the 26th of this month. And then there's this other downtown actress who I've seen in a couple shows. I really like her, especially because she has vibrant red hair. And her name's Grace McLean. She was in Natasha Pierre in A Great Comet of 1812. And
she was in that one that was just at the Vineyard.
Brooklynite. Yeah. And her newest EP with her band, Grace McLean and Them Apples, that's the name of her band, their new EP, Natural Disaster, came out. And the connecting thing between these two EP/albums is the fact that they're both musically quite eclectic. And like Ethan is like a folksy, bluesy, jazzy hybrid, and Grace is like a mix of Regina Spektor and Fiona Apple, but done in a 1940s chartreuse-like voice. But it's also very witty lyrics about, you know, not wanting to die from a natural disaster. Mm. And about, you know, sleeping in the bed with your two dogs and your wife, and how there's no intimacy. But
Was this Grace McLean or the...
Ethan.
That's Ethan. That sounds like an Ethan topic. So the point is that these aren't theater songs. These aren't theater pieces. These are just their records they're putting out, and they happen to be theater artists. Right.
Well, No Place to Go was like a theater piece.
That was.
That turned into an album. But these are just theater artists being musicians.
A lot of them do. I mean, mm-hmm. Lena Hall has a band. Kyle Jarrow and his wife, who is in Gentleman's Guide, Lauren Worsham.
Yeah, Lauren Worsham.
Have a band, Sky Pony, that's really great.
Yeah, I mean, they do... Yeah, it's interesting because that band theater piece, they've done pieces where they're like, you know, theater pieces. It makes sense.
They are kind of transitioning a little bit into theater pieces. Like Kyle Jarrow is doing a piece at New York City Film this summer with Duncan Cheek. But they do have just EPs.
I've seen their band. They're great.
Yeah, they're fun.
Yeah, it made me think of Janatha Brooke. Is that how you say her name?
Yeah.
She's a singer-songwriter.
My mother
who created a show.
Yeah.
Which she's a singer-songwriter. And it played here in New York, and now it's playing some other place
my
around
mother
the country.
Has four noses, right?
Right, that's the one.
Isn't it Cleveland Playhouse?
Might be Cleveland. Wow, it's the Cleveland link. Well, that sounds fun. Susie, what do you got to recommend?
I have an interesting recommendation.
Yep. Cleveland Playhouse. Sorry.
Called it. Go on.
Called it.
I have an interesting recommendation, and it's kind of a YouTube show. It might be just on Broadway World, but I was in Kelly O'Hara's dressing room for King and I last night, and it was like very well decorated. And I was like, oh, I really love your decoration. She's just like, oh, there's this cast member who did nice work if you can get it with me on Broadway, and he does this thing on the side when he's not performing in ensembles of shows where he redecorates people's dressing rooms backstage. And so he has this little web series type thing when he has a bunch of episodes for how he redecorates people's dressing rooms. And he does it in a day. Kelly's like, I let him in the morning, and he just did it for the day. And I kind of told him what I wanted. He makes these vision boards, and it's called Broadway Quick Change. His name is Robert Hartwell. And I just watched a few of the videos, and they were highly entertaining. I mean, he's talented. You can tell he goes kind of along similar themes. He used a lot of, like, chevron prints and mirrors and things like that. But it's kind of an interesting creative look at, you know, how actors and performers spend their life off the stage. They have these dressing rooms. I mean, obviously, not a lot in regional theaters. You're not sitting down for a long time. Broadway stars is an exception where they might be there for a year or two and want it to feel like a home away from home. But I just thought it was really fascinating, and I never heard of it before, and it's kind of fun to see behind the scenes of these theaters and see how the stars decorate their dressing rooms. So
has
I
he
would
redesigned anyone,
checking it out.
Has he redesigned anyone's in the style of Downton Abbey, like that congressman, or no?
No, I think my favorite one that I saw was he did Carly Rae Jepsen's at Cinderella when she was Cinderella, and yeah. he made it into like this princess palace that was pretty cool. Kelly's is pretty gorgeous too. There's not an episode on Kelly's, but it's really cool.
Can he be hired for the regional theaters?
I don't know.
Can he be hired for our office, Susie?
Yeah, let's call up Robert Hartwell, and he's going to redesign our office. He's done green rooms backstage. He did the Wicked green room.
Wicked.
Yeah, Robert Hartwell, we might be calling you for some help with our aesthetics in our office. It's cool, though. You can watch his videos about how he does it.
Well, great. We got stuff to watch, stuff to listen to, stuff to see. Till next time, enjoy.
Bye.